Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You know, they always say if you're doing something online that you don't want your mother or children or your wife or your husband or your pastor to know about, you probably shouldn't be doing it. The Ashley Madison scandal promised people an opportunity to hook up with others, other married couples, other singles, and have an adulterous affair, and without any consequence, complete privacy, complete anonymity. It didn't prove to be that true, did it? Because Ashley Madison was hacked and all the names are known, among them Christian pastors. What's the church's response to the Ashley Madison scandal? Joining us to discuss that on this Thursday afternoon, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to talk to you again.
How would you summarize the response or the reaction in religious communities in the U.S. to the Ashley Madison scandal?
Well, I see it as part of a larger set of issues, but I actually think there was more response than you would expect, especially if you read religious publications. One of the reasons why I wanted to write so badly about kind of the religion ghost, you know, as we put it at Get Religion, in this case, is that the best writing about this was done in the religious press, particularly a kind of online maven named Ed Stetzer, who wrote a series of incredible pieces for Christianity Today on the impact of Ashley Madison on the world of clergy and the number of people who had been outed and embarrassed and everything else. I was actually quite amazed that this did not get more mainstream coverage. And then CNN did a piece on a minister, a seminary professor at New Orleans Baptist Seminary, who committed suicide in the wake of the Ashley Madison leak. And they had his family on, and listening to the language that was used in that interview, I could tell the family's what the family was saying was being edited. That the mainstream press just wasn't maybe comfortable with them talking about forgiveness and grace and repentance, and more than anything else, urging the church to be more upfront on these issues related to sex addictions and pornography and infidelity and saving marriages. And that just really convinced me that there was a story here. And then lo and behold, a couple of days after I wrote a piece on Get Religion, kind of dissecting that CNN piece for missing these obvious religious and moral implications, into my email came a letter from the wife of the man who died, thanking me for writing that post on Get Religion and saying, yes, indeed, the family had talked over and over about the religious implications of this and about how their faith is still strong and how imperfect people sin and fall and need to be forgiven, and how none of that got into the piece. And now I really knew I had deep conviction about this, and she agreed to grant me an interview, which led to my column, which just has gone out to the Universal Press Syndicate, on what this woman, who is a full-time church professional, she leads programs in discipleship and mission at a large historic Baptist church, in the wake of her own husband's death after the scandal, she did an interview with me talking about what she wishes the church would take away from this. And flipping that over as a reporter, there are just so many interesting and valid stories related to the Ashley Madison case and church responses or lack of response to it that I just knew I had to write about it again.
So if you were sitting with at the now all too rare religion editor at the religion desk, and you were saying, here are the questions that are newsworthy in the Ashley Madison scandal as it pertains to Christians of religious types or to Christian ministers or to ministries and churches, what would you say those questions would be?
First of all, I would tell them just to start off with the hard news. Has anyone in religious leadership in your area been affected by this? And if so, are there religious institutions that are handling this well, quite literally in a graceful, with a large G, a graceful manner, while others are just like sweeping this whole thing under the rug again? And that links directly to the issue of clergy stress, and in particular, workaholism and depression. Years ago, I had a chance to interview the late Lewis McBurney, who was a Mayo Clinic-level counselor and doctor, double doctorate, and who walked away from a, you know, as you can imagine, a profitable career as a counselor to start a retreat center out in the middle of nowhere in Colorado, where he confidentially would deal only with clergy couples and church ministers and missionaries whose lives were in collapse, in crisis. And he told me something interesting when I interviewed him long ago. He said that out of all of the hundreds of ministers he worked with, he thought he had only dealt with it one case in which some form of sexual sin was not a factor. He said at the same time, he never handled a case where he thought that was the actual issue. Now, this is pretty complex stuff, but what we're saying here is that the church, because of the embarrassment about sexual sin and about the difficulty of discussing these topics like pornography addiction and sexual addictions and even prostitution and who knows what all, his point was that there are even bigger issues linked to this related to depression and workaholism and just kind of like a anger in the ministry and just the stress in ministry in general and the number of people who are pushed out of ministry because of these things. So number one, I would just say, has anything happened at your local level that you could cover related to this? There's the old saying that, you know, location, 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 and all news is local. If I was talking to religion reporters about this, I would stress that they should look and see what's going on in their area. And one possible hook for that would be, especially if you're in an area where the Southern Baptist Convention is quite strong, the Southern Baptist Convention right now is in the midst of a massive project to try to get the church to talk more openly about pornography and sexual addictions. They did a national conference on that, you may recall, less than a year ago, that received some decent press, but I haven't been seeing many local stories that actually brought that thing down to the local level and said, okay, what does that look like in a local congregation that they're going to try to talk openly about pornography, you know, and the issues that come out of it? One issue related to that that came up in my discussion with Christy Gibson was the fact that the average age of first exposure to online pornography, intentional or otherwise, in America is creeping out of the teenage years. And she said she had seen a study that said the first exposure to online porn now for American males is 9 years of age. And that's directly related to the Ashley Madison case and to the sexualization to privacy issues and pornography issues and sexual addictions, and quite frankly, to the role of the internet in a lot of American homes and the fact that a lot of families are not taking these issues very seriously. So there's another huge story, and the SBC hook, this national campaign to talk about it, is an easy door into that.
Why do you think it is, Terry, that the press doesn't jump on this? Because they're all often very hungry for stories like this of scandal, potential scandal, things like that. Is it perhaps, as you mentioned earlier, the way that Christians will frame this conversation is in a language wholly foreign?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. In other words, everybody loves a scandal, and to some degree, when the mighty fall, the press likes to cover that. But what about when the stressed out, depressed, and humble fall, and you're just left with kind of the tragedy of it, and then you have to look directly at the process of sin, repentance, forgiveness, or hiding sin, consequences, and tragedy? Those, there are incredibly poignant stories linked to that. But I'm not sure that those are theological sequences that our media is very comfortable with. This may sound like a really strange connection, but years ago, I had a chance to interview the Academy Award-winning actor Robert Duvall. And Duvall is not a believer, but he's fascinated with traditional Christianity, especially Bible Belt Southern evangelicalism. And at one point, we got into a discussion of why Christians make such lousy movies. And he said, well, I think they make lousy movies for ways that are related to why Hollywood makes bad movies about some of these subjects. He said, Hollywood doesn't want to deal with the consequences of sin, and often the church doesn't want to deal with the reality of sin. Now, that's coming from Robert Duvall. That's a pretty intense theological observation, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and it sounds like a very good diagnosis of this current situation. I mean, I don't think it's a stretch at all, Terry, to take that diagnosis into this story.
But he was pointing out that these are, to him, the most amazing human stories are the stories that either end in tragedy, and you know, in film and drama from Shakespeare to whatever has dealt with human tragedy. But at the same time, he said the stories of legitimate grace and forgiveness, where people pull their lives back together, forgive each other, learn, and move on. In other words, the good news with a capital G and a capital N. But are newspapers comfortable with that? I think this Ashley Madison case, and there are, you know, look it up in Ed Stetzer's essays at Christianity Today. He's documented the fact that there are a lot of cases across the country related to this. And this is an important religion story, but I think it's even more important at the level of local pulpits and pews on whether the media will cover, whether the church attempts to deal with this.
We're talking about the church's response to the Ashley Madison scandal. Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org is our guest. When we come back, as part of the disconnect for the press, that they don't see this as that big of a deal. We'll be right back.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Martin Luther taught that the chief function of music and worship was the proclamation of the Word of God. With Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church, you will hear over two centuries of Lutheran musical theology, beautifully performed and faithfully sung. For a limited time, save 10% on this 4-CD set when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran Thought, Lutheran Substance, Lutheran Music. Brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the church's response to the Ashley Madison scandal. Terry Mattingly is our guest, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Did you know that Concordia University Wisconsin Online has waived its application fee for Issues Etc. listeners? All you have to do is enter the program code ISSUES, and they'll waive your application fee. Concordia University Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Don't put off getting your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree. Just click on the Concordia University Wisconsin online logo at our website, issuesetc.org. Be sure to enter that program code, ISSUES. It's lifelong Lutheran learning, Concordia University Wisconsin online. Terry, I wonder about another disconnect that may be going on with the media and the press, and that is maybe it's just kind of a yawn factor. This isn't that big of a deal. If a CEO of a large company, if his name ends up on the Ashley Madison list, you know, he might reflect badly on his business, but it's not going to be a permanent damage to him. If a celebrity's name is on there, big deal. This happens all the time. What do you think about that?
Yeah, once again, I think they covered some of the cases of famous people who were outed by Ashley Madison and corporate leaders and things like that. They covered a few of those stories, but I think reporters are much more comfortable covering it at the level of the famous than they are at the level of local or real, normal people. And like trying to talk to these people and trying to learn from it, that might imply, you know, for starters, that there are good behaviors and bad behaviors, sinful behaviors even. How about stupid behaviors? Maybe this whole thing, I mean, not to impugn anything on any newspaper editors or something, but maybe the subject was just too personal and too close to home and too fleshy and human. I'll tell you one other thing that this made me think about, because I covered this quite closely, first in Colorado and then at the national level. Years ago, I was MSNBC, of all people, asked me to be kind of the color commentator for the Promise Keepers rally on the National Mall. Do you remember that event?
Sure.
That was the largest, as far as we know, the largest gathering ever on the National Mall, with the possible exception of some Civil War riots related to pensions and the military. Nobody knows how many people were there for those things. But people forget that one of the biggest themes of the Promise Keepers movement, in reaction to the kind of the more secular men's movement it was called in the late 80s and early 90s, was accountability. Men holding each other accountable on precisely these kinds of issues: workaholism, broken families, depression, sexual addictions, pornography. These subjects were talked over and over, were covered over and over in Promise Keepers rallies and in the sermons there. To some degree, you could tell journalists that it would be interesting to go out and try to find out what happened to the men's movement. Are any of those structures left in place? All those small groups and accountability groups that were started back in that era, are any of them still out there and still doing valid work? And if so, how have they handled issues related to privacy and the legal issues involving privacy and confidentiality in these kinds of cases? It's hard for the church to get involved in these issues for perfectly valid legal, confidential, privacy reasons, just as it's hard for the church to deal with counseling issues a lot. As you can tell, I can go on and on with the interesting angles that this particular case has opened up.
Here's an angle that occurred to me when the Ashley Madison thing, the hacking first became news, and then the inevitable trickle of names was coming out, famous and not so famous. And that was an angle for a reporter who might ask the question, and here you might even have to do a poll or something, do a survey. What would you do if you knew you couldn't get caught? Because that's how Ashley Madison made its money and got all those accounts, is it essentially said, we can ensure your privacy, so go ahead and do this, which you normally would never attempt in any other sense. But here's a safe place and a private place to do this, and you won't get caught. Unless you are so stupid as to let your wife know you're doing this, you won't get caught. That simple question, what would you do if you knew you couldn't get caught?
Yeah. The old moral question of who are you when there's no one else in the room?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question, and it's a devastating question for anyone who has studied the history of clergy stress and clergy breakdown. I've covered cases of clergy being arrested in sexual stings and in all kinds of things. Clergy are just as likely to be workaholics who fall into depression and the other things that lead out of that as anyone else. I'll tell you one other, here we go, here's another valid story related to this. A lot of clergy get into trouble, particularly with sexual affairs, through the process of trying to counsel other people. In the process of pastoral counseling, if you allow this thing to start turning into psychological counseling, there's a moment that they call transference, where the person begins to identify with the pastor's concerns and the pastor with the other person's concerns, and it can get really personal real quick. I heard a minister years ago, I interviewed a pastor, and boy, did he put it in blunt terms. He said, there comes a moment when the pastor, someone is pouring out their heart and pouring out their heart about how much trouble they're in their marriage and, you know, and how bad things are in their lives. And there's this moment when the pastor is tempted to say something like, well, you know, I've been there too. That's happened to me, and I've struggled with that. And this minister said, everybody knows what that is. He said, that is as self-destructive as reaching for a zipper, was how he put it, which is rather graphic for expressing it. He said, any counselor knows that the minute you lower that barrier and you make it personal on your side as well, you are asking for big trouble. And there are a lot of pastors out there attempting to do counseling who don't know how to handle that. And over in cases of clergy stress, depression, sexual addiction, or whatever, you find problems that began in counseling sessions with ministers trying to counsel other people about their own infidelities or whatever. And the next thing you know, the two parties in the counseling have identified with each other too much, and it's turned into an affair. So many stories linked to this event, and I was amazed how little coverage we got on any of them.
So what is the, if you had to have kind of the story that you would want to read, either around, I mean, or write in your case, either around the case of John Gibson or someone just like him, there are other names, famous and not so famous, in religious circles in the United States that are now associated forever with the name Ashley Madison. What would it be like?
Well, if you're dealing with a tragic situation, I think a journalist simply has to ask the question, what happens next? And that's where I thought Christy Gibson was so poignant, when she said, churches have got to do three practical things, and they've got to do it now. And she said, number one, their own clergy have to admit the kind of pressures and the stress that they're under and be more open, not in counseling sessions, like I just said, but more publicly. They've got to learn to be more transparent with their people. And then second, she said, churches have got to ask, does our church contain any safe place where people know that they can go for help on these subjects? And it could be anything from eating disorders to marital problems to pornography to sexual addictions to abuse to whatever. Do people in the church really think of their church as a place where they can get help? Or do they think of it only as a place where if I bring this up, I will be judged? And she very poignantly told me, she said, this may have nothing to do with what our churches are actually teaching or preaching, but that fear of judgment is still out there, and it's real. And it's affecting people's lives. She said, it affected my husband's life. Yes, he feared losing his job because of this, and thus couldn't stop this from escalating. And the third thing she said to me was this whole subject of churches having to get more involved with families, parents, and children, and the internet, and privacy issues, and the role of entertainment in the home, and everything from smartphones to tablets to whatever. All of those pieces of media are doors and windows into your soul. Is your church saying anything at all about that? So all three of those areas to me are perfectly valid areas for stories and coverage in the what happens next frame of reference.
What if it isn't, I'm thinking about John Gibson, and then there was R.C. Sproul Jr., if I'm not mistaken, and I'm probably forgetting some other names. How high does it have to go up into the echelons of American evangelicalism, so to speak, before it becomes the kind of story that the press will revisit in a substantive way?
Gosh, that's a cynical way of putting it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, they've already got their names. I mean, they've already got their names, and they've already got the nation's largest Protestant body trying to do a national program to deal with one aspect of it. That's an open door for coverage, wouldn't you say? So at that point, you're trying to find the local angle, but you already know what some of the headlines are. And in this case, I think it's criminal if you just do the scandal story and then drop the subject, criminal meaning I think it's sad or tragic. I think it's, you don't just let this thing just pass by. You've got to do the follow-up stories.
Finally, if when you're dealing with, and in the case of John Gibson, you're dealing with genuine tragedy, the wake of not only this, but then his subsequent suicide, is there, without getting preachy, is there a lesson that the press can deliver to us through something like this if they cover it correctly?
Well, they can start off by saying the problem is real. They could start off by saying that some churches don't want to admit this is real and others do. If you cover both sides of that, I think this could end up being constructive coverage quite quickly. If you just make it a scandal and then just kind of wad it up and throw it away, another human life gone, that's just not really taking the subject very seriously. Find out, are there churches affected by this, and are some of them dealing with it and some of them not? That's the equation.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Talk to you again.
When we come back in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we'll spend some time with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Our series, Christ in the Old Testament. Today we'll be looking at Joel 2, The Day of the Lord, finding Christ there. Then we'll review the movie Maze Runner, The Scorch Trials. Pastor Ted Giese will be our guest. The Issues, Etc. book of the month for September is called Standing Firm, A Christian Response to Hostility and Persecution. We have an upcoming interview with the author of that book, Jesse Yao. I'm looking forward to it, especially at a time when Christians are beginning to realize, it's beginning to dawn on them, that we live in a hostile culture. And that's probably a very necessary realization. Can it turn into real persecution? It's one of the things we'll find out when we talk with Jesse Yao, author of Standing Firm, A Christian Response to Hostility and Persecution, The Issues, Etc., book of the month for September. Find out more about it on every page of our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and ask for Standing Firm, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. When we come back, Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we'll be doing our series, Christ in the Old Testament, Joel Chapter 2, The Day of the Lord, with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Issues Etc. regular guest Craig Parton will present Christianity for the Academic and the Artist as part of the Village Lutheran Lectures on Christianity and Culture. Join us on Saturday, October 3rd, 2 p.m. at Village Lutheran Church, 9237 Clayton Road in suburban St. Louis. To learn more, go to villagelectures.com. Christianity for the Academic and the Artist, Saturday, October 3rd, 2 p.m., Village Lutheran, St. Louis.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com. churchmusicsolutions.com.